Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time, and the team at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, wlkr.digital. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 49.1 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason and today I'm just joined by Nick. How you going, Nick?
Jace, I'm well. I'm better than our co-host, Marty, who has either come a victim to the man flu or COVID. He keeps getting these negative rat tests. I just don't think he's doing them right. He's got aches, he's got pains, he's got fevers. He's on the couch with a blanket. I wish he was here, but yeah, I think he needs to just get a little bit further up and get the rat test happening properly.
I can't imagine Marty's the kind of guy who'd get it right up there. He'd just be tweaking it just around the little edge of his nostrils. He hasn't gone deep enough, old Marty.
I'd be surprised if he did that, mate, and doesn't just dab it in his tissue. look, unfortunate that he's not here. We were going to do the big episode 50 today, but it's episode 49.1, and we're just going to delay the big number 50 because we don't want to do it without Marty. Let's be honest.
Not the milestone episode. We can't raise the bat without Marty. So even if something happens between the next recording, we'll have to do 49.2 and we're just going to keep rolling until we hit episode 50, which could even be our 57th recording by the time we're done. But it doesn't matter. We'll call it episode 50. We'll celebrate. It'll be worth it. So rolling into today's episode, it's going to be an interesting dynamic. I think it's the first time we've done a two-person ep, so bear with us, everyone. It's, without Marty, the seasoned professional, to keep Nick and I under control, we'll have to wait.
The anchor man.
The anchor man. We'll see how we go. On today's episode, 49.1, Nick, what have we got?
Mate, we're going to talk about controlling the controllables. There is so much negativity out there at the moment. So how do you control what you can control and focus on the things that you can do to make sure you're successful, either personally or in business.
Yeah, beautiful, mate. And look, I'm going to kick off when we go into reading the play. We've got two really cool companies to talk about with some interesting facts and figures. So stay tuned and let's play. All right, reading the play, Nick. I'm going to kick it off and get straight into it. We know this is my favorite segment, so sharing some interesting stories about companies that we've seen or articles in the news. Some tips or tricks or books that we've read. And today, I actually saw this on the Shameless podcast. They talked about this and there were some videos on Instagram and Case kind of pulled it and said, Jace, check this out. This is a good one for reading the play. So once again, thank you, Casey, for the reading the play content. And went and found some articles to bring you some figures. So the story I want to share, Nick, is about the Inspired Unemployed. So not sure how much you're on Instagram and if you follow the boys. But it's a funny Instagram page where there's a bunch of larrikins that are shooting funny videos. And I think it's Jack Steele and Matt Ford are the two main guys behind it. And anyway, the story comes down to their investment or their shareholding they took in Better Beer. Have you had yourself a Better Beer, Nick?
I haven't had myself a Better Beer, but I am aware of the Inspired Unemployed. I get sent some videos and they are very funny, I must admit.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So, all right, well, Better Beer. This story kind of hit me because Case and I were on our way to Raymond Island around Chrissy New Year, and I decided I wanted to try Better Beer, and hunting down a case of this Better Beer was next to impossible. We found it in some faraway BWS kind of in East Gippsland, and we were able to stop by and grab the single last slab in the whole eastern area of Victoria. It was like the reason I couldn't find it is I didn't actually realize at the time. It is currently the fastest growing beer brand that has launched in the last 8 years. The boys have sold $8 million worth of beer between January and March this year, and nearly $10 million in total since launch in November 2021, so an extra kind of month and a half. A total of 2.2 million liters of Better Beer has been slung around. and they project to sell a further $3 million worth of beer before the end of the 2022 financial year. So April, May, June sales of over $1 million a month. Got some new products coming out too, ginger beer and a zero alcohol version. The thing is flying. It is booming. The boys own 40% stake in this beer brand. So they've kind of talked about they don't like to get behind brands and get involved as, you know, influencers unless it's something they truly believe in and get behind. And then they use their strong following to really get behind it. And I think, you know, we can, if you go and look it up and look at their videos around Better Beer, you can tell that it really aligns with their personal brand online. The guys at Mighty Craft and Torquay Beverages Co. in partnership with Endeavour Group, who own Dan Murphy's, they were the kind of guys behind Better Beer or the team behind Better Beer. But what they thought was the only way Better Beer would really blow up and expand would be to have the right marketing behind it. So they approached Jack and Matt and kind of pitched the idea of how they could be involved in Better Beer. So look, I think that is just an awesome story, a great success story. Couple of Aussie guys who now own 40% of the fastest growing beer brand launched in 8 years.
Wow. So they were approached and they were given 40%.
Yep. The 20% each. So Jack's got his own 20%. Matt's got his own 20%. So yeah, 40% of the total stake in that beer is owned.
Jeez,
by
that's
the
generous.
I think so too.
You know, but I mean, I think that would make sense if it was their idea and they just needed someone to brew it and drive it. But wow. Well done. It just goes to show how much influence they have.
I guess with like, what is it? Like 1.6 million followers or something like that. Like it is such a big captive audience and such a cheap and effective way to use their brand to reach so many people. They were probably able to study the analytics of who actually followed the Inspired Unemployed. They're probably going, it's 25 to 35 year old, mostly male following, you know, that are predominantly in that beer drinking market, not to kind of cut anyone else out of that, but they would have been looking at, you know, who are the main people that buy beer, or the younger target market then they talked about, you know, are more interested in this low carb, low calorie kind of replacement to your stereotypical lagers and Carlton drafts and things like that. So yeah, but look, I thought 40% was a big kind of amount to carve out for someone if you're giving it to them. But then I think when you think about the success they've had, they're probably sitting back going, oh, well, the other 60% wouldn't be worth what it is today without those two guys being involved. So, great
success.
Well,
yeah, and you can only imagine what the marketing budget looks like for a normal beer. Mm. You know, look at some of the Carlton draft ads. They'd just be spending millions and millions of dollars. So,
big time.
You know, it's there's their marketing play. Jace, was it any good out of 10? And what would you compare it to?
Oh, yeah. Definitely good. I enjoyed it. Probably 8 out of 10. And compared to like your other kind of summery light kind of beers, like your 4X summer, you know, really light, mild kind of flavor. It's not a deep, you know, kind of pale ale or hoppy, things like that. So yeah, just really easy to drink. You smash a few of them down to quench the thirst on a warm summer's day and you're laughing.
What sort of margins do you think they run at? I'm just trying to think about how much money they're actually making. And I know they've sold 8 mil worth, I think you said, but-
Yep, 8 million sales to date and looking at-
Any idea?
No, I'll come back to you. I might have to do a follow-up on that. But
let's
do
that, episode 50.
Episode 50, follow-up on the margins on just how much the boys have made from their 40% stake. But where it's really, I think the alcohol brands are making some super mega bucks at the moment is all the zero alcohol beverages because the biggest cost in the alcohol is the tax, the excise tax that you have to pay to the government when you sell alcohol. So, you know, when you're selling a six pack of beer for $20 and it's, you know, 5% alcohol, a good chunk of that $20 is going to the government in taxes. You look at the price of a six pack of alcohol free beer, it's still like $16 or $17. They're not really giving you a huge discount, you know, on what you're getting. Mm. So they're actually making a hell heap more margin because there's no tax to give to the government for excise.
Clever.
Bloody oath.
Well, switching from from beer to a boring topic of milk, and it's not about milk, but I want to talk about a company called Milk Run. I didn't know anything about them, to be honest, until you mentioned it the other day. So I went and did a little bit of investigating. And for those of you who don't know what Milk Run is or what they do, founded by Dan Milham, one of the co-founders of Koala Mattresses, which was a huge success. You get the mattress, comes in a box, you open the box, it spreads out, and happy days. And they weren't bad. We actually had one on a spare bed in our house for quite some time, and they were pretty good.
What do you rate it out of 10?
Good question. probably six.
Yeah.
6 to 7, which is not bad for a spare bed. And $1,000, I think it was from memory, or maybe just under. And
laughing.
You know how expensive mattresses can be now. So this is Dan's new idea. And if you're from Sydney, you've probably seen them, but they have the Milk Run electric bikes, and they're delivering groceries to people's door within 10 minutes. That is their catchphrase. Really interesting numbers. Blew me away, actually. And I guess because of Dan's background, that's how he got access to this sort of money. But so far, they've raised $86 million, $11 million in the initial seed round, and they've just raised another $75 million. At a valuation that was undisclosed. However, rumors are saying it's in the hundreds of millions from a valuation point of view. Now, it's important to remember with these companies that how do you really value a company like that that doesn't have huge revenues yet, that has a lot of potential? The companies that are raising the capital put these high valuations in to protect the founders' interests, basically. So, they don't when they go to market and they raise this money, they don't want to dilute the interest or the ownership of the owner. So they generally put high multiples from a valuation point of view. So who knows what it's really worth, but they're talking hundreds of millions to protect Dan's position. $2.99 delivery fee, delivered within 10 minutes, orders over $30, then you don't pay a delivery fee. So where it's really handy, and I spoke to a mate of mine yesterday about this because he uses it. It's when you're cooking or you want to feed the kids or whatnot, and there's something you don't have. You know, you might look at a recipe and you might go, oh, geez, it needs chili powder. I don't have any. I'll just get it from Milk Run, and then it'll be there in 10 minutes. That, to me, is where the real market is. I know you mentioned you've used it sort of late night, couldn't be bothered going out, it was a bit later. And they'd bring stuff to you.
We had Regan, Casey's nephew, over, and we got through one packet of microwave popcorn watching Sonic 2 on Apple Plus, whatever it was, or Apple. And he turned around and he goes, oh, Auntie Case, Uncle Jace, I want more popcorn. And I didn't even really kind of pay attention, but Case pulled out the phone. She wanted to drink some milk with her popcorn, and so did he. So we ordered the milk, ordered the popcorn, and I think maybe not sure if it was a tub of ice cream or whatever else it was. And yeah, within 10 minutes, Case was going, Jace, Milk Run delivery's here. Got to go downstairs. And bang, sure enough, another packet of popcorn in the microwave. And we've got a happy 7-year-old watching Sonic 2. So it worked.
There you go. So yeah, there's a few areas where people would think that it would be quite handy. You know, there's a lot of people that are doing Coles and Woolies delivery, but that comes, I'm not sure how often, but I think it comes within the day or something. But if you can get it within 10 minutes, that's great. I don't know. It's, for me, there's a lot of questions. The first question is competitors, and I know there are a couple of competitors that have gone out of business that haven't been able to make it work. You know, what if Coles and Woolies decide that they want to compete in this space? I know Coles and Woolies are very good at making other businesses disappear or other competitors disappear. Dan has boldly stated that they will be bigger than Coles and Woolies in 10 years' time. He's on the record as saying that. The other thing I thought about was, and just to explain this to the listeners, because the first thing I thought, well, how does it work logistically? Do they go to the supermarket, buy the stuff, and then deliver it? No, not at all. They actually hold their own stock. So they have distribution centers and smaller distribution centers in suburbs.
Yep.
And they will work out of that distribution center. They only hold 200 products per suburb on the shelves at any given time, whereas Coles and Woolies would hold about 20,000.
Yeah,
okay. So Coles and Woolies run at about a 5% profit margin. Dan says that they'll be much higher because they're hyper-local, so they're only adding suburbs as they go. They're not available to everyone. It depends on the suburb that you're in. So, from what I can understand, they'll slowly add distribution centers within the city.
Yep.
And it looks like they're sticking to suburbia. And then that way they can stick to their delivery promise of 10 minutes. Just another number I've got here. 50 staff per week they're adding at the moment. And they're adding one suburb per week in both Sydney and Melbourne.
Jeez, pretty aggressive growth, isn't it?
Well, you know, when you've got $86 million to spend, I guess there's only one place to spend it, and in this instance, and that's staff. So they've got 1,100 staff at the moment. So a couple of things I thought about. First thing I thought was I'm going to log on and have a look at this, because I spoke to, as I said, a friend of mine yesterday who uses it a lot, and he's in Sydney. He said they're not 10 minutes anymore. He said it's 10 to 15 every time. Mm-hmm. He said the other issue was there's a lot of times where they don't have whatever you're used to consuming. So, there might be one thing that you're used to consuming that they don't have, which means you need to go to the supermarket anyway. So, does that defeat the purpose? The last thing that he mentioned was a lot of times they're out of stock. So, I actually logged online myself last night. I live in Port Melbourne. I thought, well, Port Melbourne, it's close to the city, shouldn't be any issues. There was at least, I'm just going to hazard a guess, 30% of the stock said back soon, meaning that they're out of stock. So, I don't know why that is. Like, I guess it's probably a supply. Like, there's supply issues everywhere. You go to Coles in Port Melbourne at the moment and the shelves are half empty. So, maybe that's what it is. I don't know. It's an interesting model, but I think there's a lot of questions to be answered. You know, what happens in winter when the rain starts falling? How do you get people to ride e-bikes around? As I said, there's 1,100 staff at the moment. They're adding 50 a week. At what stage do they struggle to find people to drive or ride e-bikes? And then are you reliant on things like Uber and taxis, like some of the other big businesses are that have delivery services, and then your costs go up? So, yeah, for me, I'm not sure about it, to be honest, but Dan is far more intelligent than I am. You've only got to look at Koala, and his background is logistics and operations. So, if anyone can make it work, he can, but watch this space. Will I use it? I'm not sure. I like the idea of, like I said, when you're cooking or there's something you want to do and you don't have it there and you can start on everything else and know that it'll be there in 10 minutes. That's where I see the value. I don't really see the value I wouldn't mind some popcorn, because I think there's other ways you can make that work. These guys are focusing on groceries, and they've just introducing alcohol and also ready-to-eat meals as well, makes sense. But then you're up against all the existing businesses. So, yeah, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting space to watch. And I live in South Yarra, so as I've started to see all these bikes roaming around Toorak Road and Chapel Street, you know, from a branding perspective, like the paste up billboards that you see on the side of buildings, they're all kitted out in Milk Run branded t-shirts and spray jackets. The bikes are branded. Like it's pretty slick, right? As you said, you know, when you've got $80 million to splash around. Also, you know, a sign of what I think are the more interesting startups. So the capability or the stock of the people who get behind it, and you know, Mike Cannon Brooks, who's in the media heaps at the moment, you know, trying to buy out AGL, founder of Atlassian, you know, billionaire, he's one of the investors. So I think, you know, he's to get him on board and show him the vision and the dream of what they're trying to do, you know, to say the vision is to be bigger than Coles and Woolworths one day in the grocery space. I mean, that's a big vision, right? That's, you know, talking about controlling controllables or being optimistic. You know, this guy's, you know, he's having a crack, and he's got some really, you know, Tiger Global Management just helped raise a huge amount of money for Mr. Yum, Airtree Ventures. There's some big backers behind Milk Run. So I think, you know, watch that space. It's interesting. I like it. But I think as well, yeah, as you said, when you add the ready-made meals and alcohol, I sit here and see, you know, my local Woolies is selling heaps of Muscle Chef and Dynamic, and the ready-made meal section is usually empty. It's ransacked. It's just destroyed every day, because the busy kind of inner city professional that spends, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week working instead of being at home preparing meals, this is a service that they're probably happy to use, because it just gives them that edge on a little bit more time back. So,
yeah. The biggest concern for me is the delivery. You've only got to look at what's happened to Uber. You know, Uber's gone downhill as far as service goes, as in Uber Eats, sorry, I'm talking about now, and Uber, because there's just a lack of drivers. And
have they all gone to Milk Run, though?
Well, maybe. Maybe. But in winter, they'll be all back in cars, I can tell you that much. So, it's such a big, from what I can see, such a big part of their offering is that 10-minute delivery. Otherwise, if it's 20 to 30 minutes, are you just going to duck down to Coles? I could be to Coles in Port Melbourne and back within 15. So, that's a really hard thing to get right, I think.
I was going to say, I feel like any business valuation or business model that relies on human, like human resources to get things done, it's a much harder business to run and operate. You know, you've got payroll taxes and all these other things. You've got employees getting hit by a car and getting injured in the workplace, work cover claims. You've got to find people to ride the bikes in winter and all of that, as opposed to, you know, Koala mattresses being distributed, made in a warehouse somewhere, packed into a box, outsourced to distribution. It's a different model. So, much harder business to get right, but all the best to them.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
All right, Jace, Marty's favourite segment. So, Marty, I know you're out there listening, mate, and this one is dedicated to you. You have a losing it for us, Jace, in Marty's absence.
Yeah, I do. But in preparation for the big episode 50 milestone, we are going to swing it into a winning it just for the big 50 milestone. So be prepared for that one, guys. Get excited. But in the meantime, on the fly with Marty out of action, we've come up with something to share as a bit of a losing it, which is all about, you know, sharing an original thinking, talking about what went wrong, and then an outcome or a lesson from that losing it. And today, just, you know, recently, I mean, today the recording is 26th of May, and there's some articles that have come out about a company called Remy Capital, which has gone into voluntary administration, just basically overnight news or this morning. So that's an investment company that it has investors put their money in. It takes the investors' money and it invests it into property projects to then get a return for their investors and pay that return back to people. So it looks like around 450 of the investors that backed Remy Capital and put their money in and trusted the people operating that business have gone and lost at the moment. It looks like they're going to be losing $70 million of that. So unfortunately, the sign of the times is this, you know, Remy Capital is not alone. They're not the only one that's been in the news lately. We know recently, I think we talked about it on early episodes, ProBuild and Monaco Hickey went under with about $5 billion worth of projects around the country that weren't going to be finished. Personally, small business clients that we look after at Future Advisory were affected by the ProBuild and Monaco Hickey liquidation. So unfortunately, there's people that, you know, they're not going to struggle to put food on tables, but there's big chunks of money that is missing from small business owners' pockets at the moment because of these bigger companies that are going under up the food chain. So then beyond ProBuild, Monaco Hickey, we also had Condev went under in Queensland. They're responsible for about $1 billion or $2 billion worth of projects. And then recently, the media hype around Metricon. Metricon came out in the news during the week. Unfortunately, the CEO looks like he may have taken his life, something going on there. But all of a sudden, the media throws up this hype around Metricon must be in trouble. And from all accounts of what we're hearing, that's absolutely crap. There's emails and things going on behind the scenes from the building association saying, no, don't believe the media, business as usual, let's roll on. And having spoken to a couple of clients who work with Metricon, they're getting paid on the due date every single time. So that's not me giving an endorsement, but they're saying the info I'm hearing is that it's very different to what the media is saying, that it's struggle town and people aren't getting paid. So unfortunately, in volatile times, while we do have at the moment so many businesses that are looking like they're going under or struggling, we've got the ATO now in a position to hunt down the debts that they're owed. So you got to keep in mind that for the last 2 years, because of COVID, the ATO actually put a pause on the ability to liquidate a company pretty much, and they also put a pause on their own debt collection activity. So there was, if somebody owed you money, you weren't able to go and appoint a liquidator to try and shut down that business and go after your money. There was basically a pause and a hold on the whole liquidation space. This is now opened up. It's go time. Liquidators and insolvency specialists are salivating at the amount of work that is going on at the moment, like the Remy Capital jobs and the ProBuild jobs. And this is only just the beginning. So my losing it and my warning at the moment, and especially with the episode where we're talking about controlling the controllables, have a look at your own operations, have a look at your figures and books, your balance sheet. If things aren't operating too good at the moment and you're looking like you might be heading into a bit of strife, you need to start having those conversations early. before there's that flow on effect where you're burning people down the chain. Or if you're one of those people that deals with a company you suspect may be in trouble up the food chain, you also need to look at your own exposure and have a look at, what am I willing to lose if that business went under? How much credit terms am I extending? Am I doing 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? And am I owed 50 grand or 500 grand? And what am I okay with losing if a business goes under? So they're the kind of things that I think are the warning and the lessons from, oh, the other one, Nick, while I think of it, your Milkrun example, there was a business called Send that was doing the same thing as Milkrun. They had 300 employees. They went into liquidation in the last couple of weeks as well. So not an easy business model. And, you know, it's not just the builders and property type businesses that are going under. It's widespread. And my warning is, you know, have a look at your own operations, but have a look at your exposure and the risk that you've got with the types of businesses that you're working with, depending on your industry.
Well, I'm not actually across Remy. So were they a funder that were lending money out to, I'd assume, property development type of stuff where people can't get money from banks?
They were bringing the money in and then doing the property development and then taking and then making money off that property development to give back to the property investor or to the investors.
So they were the developers, not just lending to developers.
I think it was a combination of both. They had their own projects in places like Pakenham, Tarneit, Sunshine. So they were running their own projects. They were bringing in all this money. They were trying to run the projects. And then, I think what ended up happening is they burnt through too much money and that's where the investors' money disappeared before they could get a return.
Yeah, and those projects, they can blow out timeframe-wise. Mm. And, you know, you still need to run the business. You still need to pay staff. And
supply chain, costs, materials, all these things that have gone up, if you're trying to do it under, let's say you're doing the project yourself and it's not under a fixed price contract and the costs just keep blowing out and exploding, the only way they were going to do it was to continue to raise more money. And if they're trading insolvently, they had to make the call to wrap it up. And it sounds like that was the hard call they made. And they stopped communicating with their investors for a long time because they were in the process of, well, they said they were reviewing their cash flow. So then for about an 8-week period, they just stopped talking to their investors. And I believe they were paying like ongoing kind of like interest earnings. So it's like, you know, you put in $1 million and you're going to get paid $10,000 a month every month for the 2 years that the project goes on. And then at the end of the project, you get your $1 million back plus a share of the profit on the development. So, you know, it's one of those things that high risk is high reward, but at the same time, sometimes things that sound too good to be true can end up, you know, falling over and not being the thing that you thought it was going to be. I'm not saying that was the exact structure of what Remy were doing, but they're the kind of structures that we see some clients get involved in where they go, oh, I've put a couple of hundred grand into this. It's paying me ongoing income. And at the end, I get all my money back plus a share of profit on the property development. And it's like, cool. Like, I know we all think property is super safe and property developments make heaps of money, but there is so much room for it to go wrong when it comes to cost blowing out and maybe, you know, you can't get the price you thought you were going to get when you sell that development.
And, you know, again, we spoke about this last episode, but you need to understand what your risk profile is and how much money you're putting into that. So, hopefully, the people that are involved with that in that have other means, and there isn't too much heartache. But it's a sad story either way.
All right, Nick, the one percenters really missing Marty's input along the way here with his wisdom and words of gold. But I think we're going all right. We're powering through. We've got the one percenters left to wrap up this one on episode 49.1, and it's where we talk about those small things that have big impacts in our lives. Nick, controlling the controllables, why don't you fire us off on what you've got?
Jace, really looking forward to this because I think it's so important in times like we're experiencing at the moment. And where I'm going with that is there is so much negativity in the world at the moment, whether you're reading newspapers, whether you're on social media, whether you're reading online media, watching TV, everything is negative. Well, 90% of things are negative. So you've got to be really careful about what you're taking in. And I just wrote some stuff down that's happening in the world at the moment just to remind everyone of some of the stuff that we're seeing. We've just had an election here, a lot of negativity around Labor, Liberal, Labor are in it, but are they going to be able to govern? that's just, you know, who we're really confused about where we're going to go as a country in the next 3 years. You've got interest rates on the increase. You've got a war between Russia and Ukraine. You've got inflation. You've got supply chain issues that's causing inflation. You've got shootings in America too that are just shocking stories in the last couple of weeks. You've got businesses going broke like we just spoke about, and big businesses. You've got a share market going down. You've got a bond market going down. And throw in with that some shitty weather that we're experiencing at the moment, and it's only going to get worse. And you know, there's research around colder weather making us not feel so good. So it's very difficult at the moment to get a positive spin on life if you're taking all of this in and you're not worrying about controlling the controllables. So what we wanted to talk about today is
it seems like almost everyone I'm talking to at the moment, including our boy Marty, is sick. People have either got the flu, they've got a cold, they've got a cough, they've got COVID. And then the other thing that came to mind as you're talking about businesses and other struggles is the war on talent, like the how hard you have to fight to get good people into your business to hire people at the moment. And, you know, that talk of the great resignation, we're starting to see now more people moving and shifting jobs, and with the inflation that you touched on as well, people are going to start to have to move if they want, you know, they're going to be hunting for pay rises. And while there's struggles to find talent, people are putting, you know, big recruitment sign-on bonuses out there. So that's causing some disruption in the market as well, and you know, driving up costs from a wage sense for business owners as well in a really difficult time across the board. So that was some extra ones on top of that. So
yeah, sorry well, to yeah, ruin and- flow, but- No. They were good ones. So I'm glad you did. So I guess what this made me think is, and I'm just referring to the election now, and we started our business in 2007. And first thing I thought was, geez, if it was Labor or Liberal in the last, you know, 15 years, would that have changed our business, and would our business be in a different position to what it is now? And would I personally be in a different position to what it is now? And I struggled to find any reason why anything would be any different. I think the answer would be no. I think our business would still be doing what it's doing. There hasn't been any major political decisions that have changed the way our industry runs, and I know that might be different for some others. But definitely on a personal level, absolutely no chance is anything that's going on in the world at the moment affecting what I do day to day. And that's not me saying, you know, I'm too good to be affected by that stuff. I'm just saying it actually doesn't impact what I'm doing. It doesn't have apart from inflation with the price of goods going up, there's nothing that really has a major impact. And I think, you know, we talk about interest rates as well. Well, you know, a lot of our clients, even though they're going to have an interest rate rise, they're still saving money. So I think everyone's going to be okay. Everything that we look at now, whether it's a laptop and we get a notification pop up, whether it's our phone and, you know, we're on social media and the news starts to pop up, this stuff is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So what we're going with today, as we said, is controlling the controllables. So how do you do that day to day? How do you shut the noise out to make sure you're not taking this stuff in and then continue on with your day doing what you were going to do anyway? So it's things like, you know, pull back on your social media. Mm-hmm. Don't look at it all the time, because more than likely, your feed is getting fed with negative information at the moment. And if you're following up on that negative information and you're reading it, then the algorithms know you're reading it and you're going to continue to get that stuff fed to you. So, if you're someone who is struggling at the moment with motivation or think, you know, things aren't going that well, just make a couple of small changes, such as don't look at the news, don't look at social media. If you're not exercising because you're injured, and you know, we spoke about this with Marty, he's got a sore hip at the moment, but he's doing other things he can do exercise wise. If you've been sick, find an exercise routine that you can slowly build up back to where you were. Have some structure in your days. And we talked about back to basics with finance a couple of weeks ago, but this is back to basics as an individual. Yeah, and I know personally for me, if I'm looking at social media a lot, I can tell I change. My mindset changes, my attitude changes. As soon as I stop looking at social media and I focus on what I can do well and the things that I can control in my day, which is, you know, running the business and what do we need to do in the business, things get done, I become happier, and life is just better. So I think we need to be really careful at the moment about what we're taking in, and we need to focus on positive things and the things that we can control to ultimately achieve the outcome we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and a proactive tip on that, controlling social media use. I've got room to improve, but one thing I did was get my phone away from being on the bedside table in the morning and at nighttime. So Emma, oh, I can't remember her name. Emma, she's a coach. She was the coach of Richmond Football Club, like a mindset coach. One of her tips was kind of don't sleep with your phone in the bedroom. Plug it in the kitchen, chuck it on charge, set your alarm for in the morning. And it also stops you from hitting that snooze button a million times when you don't feel like getting up, but you know you've set your alarm early to go for a run, do some exercise, do some meditation, whatever it is. But the bad habit I was in when I had the phone on the bedside table was to wake up in the morning, hit the alarm, and then open social media and clear notifications on like Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And that's when you start wiring and firing your brain to see that negative news and the negative things going on. So getting rid of that altogether, you know, first thing in the morning was a huge change for myself personally. Where I've got room for improvement is at nighttime on the couch. Case and I'll have our last hour on the couch to wind down for the day and we'll put on a TV show, but somehow we're both kind of sitting there scrolling on our phones at the moment. So that's good advice, Nick, to get away from social media and control what you're consuming, which will then have an impact on your mood and how you're feeling.
Yeah, and look, we're all guilty of that. I do it as well on the couches at night, and then you find yourself doing it and you think, geez, what am I doing? I really like the phone idea, and I've mentioned this before, but my phone's generally on airplane mode until around 8:30, and I've only recently started this, but I like to get up and read now first thing. So I get up and read generally a businessy type book, because I find I can't read that stuff at night because it gets my mind ticking. But I like to get up, and I know Marty does the same. He does he looks at things that he's interested in business wise. That's how he starts his day. And for me, I generally read a business book of some type for the first 20-25 minutes while I have a coffee. I actually can't wait for that time in the morning. I really enjoy it. Not sure if it's because of the book or because of the coffee, but either way, I enjoy it. And it's a cracking start to the day. You haven't taken in negative media. You've learned something. You feel like you've achieved something because you've read, you know, 10 pages of, you know, on your business, or it could be self-help whatever it is. It could be fiction. But I think getting back to those structures now more than ever is important. You've mentioned here, speaking about this episode, you mentioned, you know, if you can't exercise or if there's things going on from an injury point of view, you're focusing on recovery and you're structuring your day around recovery and making sure you're still doing something to look after your body physically and mentally.
Yeah. And you actually challenged me. I was actually being a bit of a sad sack of shit in our pre-game kind of chat and notes. And I said that I've been feeling down and my mindset hasn't been where it needed to be. And there was a whole myriad of factors. But one of the things off the back of COVID and 3 or 4 weeks of having this bloody cough and feeling miserable, I'm sleeping more than ever. And instead of seeing that as a positive that I was resting and recovering, I've been negative about it, going, oh, there's not enough hours in the day. I feel like crap. I'm not exercising. But you turned around and said, well, Jason, you know, you can go for a walk. Like, just because you can't go and run, you know, 10Ks in 5 minute Ks or go and smash a gym class, go for a walk, like get the fresh air, get out there and just do something positive. So I kind of, that was a good wake up call and reminder for me. And fortunately, I've been back at gym the last 3 mornings. And what a difference that makes to your mood and your outlook on life when you can get some routine and some habits back into place, like exercise. And that's my morning routine is, you know, the 6 a.m. alarm and at the gym and doing that workout. And all of a sudden I'm a different person over the last 3 days and that mindset and mood has changed. But yeah, I mean, it's all about finding what works for you and putting that routine in place. And what I heard from you, which, you know, made me think there's a book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. I absolutely love it. One of my most recommended books, The Power of Habit. And it's all about cue, routine, reward. So your cue in the morning is that, you know, you read your book, that's your routine, and the reward is that how good you feel, and you're probably tying it into coffee there as well. So, you know, it's all about achieving a reward by doing something positive for yourself, and that's what you can control. But you've also got to be good at making time for that. Like, because if you don't set your alarm half an hour early and you let yourself sleep in and then all of a sudden you just got to rush straight to work, that's ruining the flow of your day. So there's a deliberate element to how you've got to control all of these things in your life, but it's all about making it easy as well. You want to make it part of a normal routine and not make it feel forced or unnatural, because then you're going to stop the enjoyment of it. So I talk about, you know, something simple at Future for our clients that don't like doing their bookkeeping. I go, but do you enjoy having a coffee in the morning? They go, yeah, I love my morning coffee. I say, cool, one of your morning coffees, just reconcile your books for 5 minutes as you're sipping your coffee, and just click the button and, you know, reconcile your fuel and your bank fees and whatever else. And by the time you've finished your coffee, your bookkeeping's done, you get a big green tick and you feel good, but you've tied that into another reward. So anyway, controlling the controllables around that, that's a little bit of an extra tip there.
Yeah, and yeah, everything that we're talking about comes back to, I guess, having a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, that's a choice. And I know there's things that go on in life that mean you're not positive, and that's fine. But generally, when there's nothing significantly impacting you, being positive and optimistic is a choice that you make every day. And you've got to choose to be that positive person. You know, yep. We've got something on our wall in the office that says, I'm looking at it now, it says, where focus goes, energy flows. So, you're consistently feeling negative and acting negative and being negative, you're going to attract that negative energy in. It's a fact. That's not a rah-rah or, you know, that's not being woke. That is actually fact. If you put positive energy out there, it comes back to you. And that's because that's the way that you're acting around people that you're hanging around, whether they're your peers or your family. And, you know, Marty mentioned this before he got sick and he was going to jump in the episode, but the last thing he wants is when people see the phone ringing and they see his name popping up, he doesn't want them to go, oh, shit, it's Marty. What's he going to complain about today?
Mm.
When people see Marty's name on the phone, and I can attest to this because he rings me a lot, I know he's going to be up and about. I know he's going to be positive. I look forward to talking to him because I know it's going to be a good conversation about some good stuff, whether it's business, personal, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whereas there's other people, whether they're friends or whatnot, if you pick the phone up and you see their name, you may or may not want to talk to them because you know it's going to be a negative conversation. So, send the positive vibes out. They come back and then you just get this circle of positive energy and things will turn out a lot better.
Yeah. So, that positive energy breeds positive experiences. So, I think that's really important to, you know, controlling controllables, but you can actually control how you feel. You know, and even telling yourself that you're going to be happy and deliberately smiling, even when you don't feel like smiling, you will feel happier and the people around you will feel happier, and that kind of breeds and spreads that way. And I actually loved that from Marty. You know, it actually made me think, like, when I'm calling people, like if I'm going, oh, I'm sick, I don't feel well, business is busy, life's shit, people aren't going to want to talk to me. Like if that's the energy that I'm putting out to the world. Or when you do get on the phone to someone, have a conversation, it's, man, I'm good. Look, there's some challenges, but, you know, we're learning from it and we're growing. Hey, cool. That's a more positive spin on a way to say that, hey, shit, we're busy and under the pump, but we're growing and we're learning and we're feeling good about it. You know, Marty actually wrote it that, you know, every challenge, and this is our pre-notes, and I love stuff like this from Marty, and we're going to bring him into the episode even if he can't be here, but he talked about it, innovate. You know, when, you know, you guys have had your challenges, all business owners do, but when you guys get hit with something that goes wrong, you, Geordie and Marty aren't sitting there going, oh, geez, you know, business sucks. Like, this is bad. You look at it and go, we're going to come out of this stronger and better for the experience, and we're going to learn from it, and it's going to make a huge difference to how we operate moving forward. And again, that positive mindset of how you tackle a scenario or a situation and how you learn from it is different to walking away feeling dejected and having a negative mindset about it.
Yeah, and those shakeups in the business are not going to stop. They're going to happen all the time, whether it's every 12 months, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. They have to happen for the business to recover and then grow again. Otherwise, you know, we don't learn anything. So the challenges will keep coming, and it's how you handle them, and a lot of that's mindset based. And yeah, Marty's spot on. We feel that there's nothing that we can't work through if we actually sit down, look at the facts, work out what's got to be done and do what we need to do. And it may or may not be the right decision, but it's not the end of us. And if it's not the right decision, then we're at least going to learn from it and grow. And that's not just business, that's personally as well. And I would just challenge anyone, if you're in a rut at the moment, because there is so much going on that's negative, and you find that you're stuck and you can't do exercise and you're in a negative mindset, maybe one thing that has worked for me in the past is just completely change it up. Try something completely different, whatever it is, do some research, speak to your friends, whether it's exercise, whether it's reading books, whether it's education of something else, just try something different. Completely change what you would usually do. Just keep trying things. Just keep trying to mix it up until something really works for you and find something that you're enjoying doing, whether that's in the morning or the evening, but anything that can get you in a positive mindset.
Yeah, I think that comes down to self-care and self-love, really. I mean, just prioritize how you're feeling and prioritize your health and your mental, you know, mental state. And it's important to just stop and take stock of how you're feeling. Like if all day, every day, you're just, you know, you're going through the motions and you're feeling burnt out and tired and you're not yourself, stop, take a couple of deep breaths and take stock on how you're feeling. And as you said, change it up, go do something different, take a day off and go for a hike in the mountains, like whatever it is that's different, but just prioritize you. And I think that's really important that in this crazy busy world that we live in with so much negativity in the media and, you know, we're just getting hit with all angles, remember to stop and prioritize you. Give yourself back something to make yourself feel good and see if you can kind of reset the how you're being wired and at the moment.
And think about the things that make you happy. And I've got a couple of live examples for myself. I was an avid SEN listener, and this is not this is not to downplay SEN, but I just got so sick of listening to people ringing up and whinging about the umpiring on AFL, and I was just like, what am I doing? I worked out it was actually putting me in a shitty mood, so I've stopped listening to SEN, and I'm back to music. I'm listening to music again, which I haven't done in the car for five to 10 years, maybe 10 years. It's all been radio or, you know, mainly SEN because I love sport. Mm. I'm back to music, and it just puts me in such a better mood. Like, so that's one thing that I've done, and I realized I was getting the shits because I was listening to the radio, and I'm thinking, what am I doing? My wife is overseas at the moment, so I've got a lot of downtime at home, and I'm doing all the cooking for myself and whatnot. So I've stopped putting the TV on and the news on, which is something that I used to do. Now I'll listen to a podcast for half an hour or an hour, and I'll try and listen to a podcast, number one, that I like.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying it. And number two, one that's, I guess, positive instead of reading about or listening about everything bad that's going on in the world. That's a game changer. So you can think about what makes you happy and just bring that in some way. And you'd be surprised how much of a difference that will make.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, outside of that, I mean, you hear all the usual stuff like meditation and, you know, again, comes down to the things that you enjoy. If you want to cook in the kitchen with a podcast on, that's awesome. Mine and Case's thing at the moment after you know, a day is get in the kitchen, cook, and then watch MasterChef. And I tell you what, if MasterChef doesn't make you happy, and if you like food and cooking, I don't know what will, because I reckon I've almost cried every second episode of MasterChef. And for some reason, I just get emotional watching it. It makes me feel good. But, you know, and the other thing that I wanted to touch on as well, just kind of ticking off all the things that we'd written down pre-show, was who you surround yourself with as well can have a big impact on how you feel from an optimistic and, you know, being positive point of view, you know, and you can control that. You can control who you spend the most time with. And if you're surrounding yourself with people who are negative and complaining and generally unhappy, that's going to rub off on you as well. So if you need to, you know, get a reset and separate yourself from that for a while and, you know, just think of who's your happiest, most optimistic, positive mate or girlfriend, and go and find a way to spend some time with them and see if that doesn't put you in a good mood. Go and get a better beer while you're at it too.
Yeah, why not? 8 out of 10, apparently. Be interested to see what everyone else thinks.
Yeah, let us know. This has been episode 49.1 of The Numbers Game. Nick, the end of the game here. What have you enjoyed about the show?
Just talking about how we can progress our own lives and shut the noise out, you know, sit back, look at what's going on, understand what's going on, and just have a real good think about, is that really affecting me and what I do day to day? And how do I just continue doing what I'm doing? The sooner you do that, the more you'll progress, without a doubt.
Awesome, mate. For me, Nick, one of the things that I'm going to take away is that message of prioritize you. Have a look at yourself. How are you feeling right now? Actually stop and take a few deep breaths and think about, are you happy? Are you feeling good right now? And if you're not, just put some of those basic things in place to do the things that make you happy. That's our message for today. If you've enjoyed the show, guys, we are getting out there. We're getting lots of positive feedback at the moment. We absolutely love that our listeners are spreading the word and telling their friends and family. We're on Instagram. We're on LinkedIn. Give us a follow of our pages. Share some of our videos with your friends and family so they can get some value from this too. We want to grow the numbers game family. So thank you for listening. Game over.